Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. So today we're going to talk about the Bhagavad Gita. So just some basic history of it. It is a very prominent yogic text, meaning that you have the word yoga in it many times, and it offers different forms of yoga. Not just one type of yoga. There's many different types of yoga that are offered up in the Bhagavad Gita. It's about 2,500 years old. That's what the scholars kind of dated at. And then to understand it as it's a book within a book. So meaning that it's a chapter pulled out of a larger book called the Mahabharata. So the Mahabharata is like Maha being great, Bart meaning India. So there's this sense of the Bhagavad Gita that I wasn't aware until one of my teachers really told me that it's a book within a book, and then it made more sense, because up until then I was trying to read the first chapter and just getting lost. You know, I can remember going to Barnes & Noble and looking at the section, like the Eastern Thought section, and I would always see the Bhagavad Gita, so I kind of knew it was an interesting book, and it was a book that I should know, and that I actually had and tried to read many times, but it never really did it for me, because it's hard to get past the first chapter, because there's all these names that they give, and you don't know who they are. And who they are prominent characters in the Mahabharata. So once you get past that, or either you read the Mahabharata and you learn who these people are, or you just kind of bypass the first chapter, or most of the first chapter, and you start at the second chapter, which is where really the philosophy gets kicked off, and you get introduced to Sankhya right away. Sankhya is the difference between spirit and matter. And then yoga is the execution of that knowledge that we are not the body, or we are not just a material thing. And yoga is then that knowledge put into use, put into your daily life. So I'm going to just go through chapter one, or one little section of chapter one, that I think is super cool and interesting, and really helped me understand how the book could help in my life. So, like I said, the first few shlokas, the shloka is just like the Bhagavad Gita is broken down into like these different stanzas, and you know, you have usually about 4 or 5 line stanzas. And sometimes they're a little longer, but for the most part, they're really broken down into these 4 lines. Those are called shlokas. So the first shloka that you really kind of connect to, or that I connected to, was 1.23. And you have here, basically, the Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, and you get a sense that in 1.23, Arjuna, who is an archer, so basically, if you picture, I mean, they didn't have like automatic weapons and things like that back then. They had, you know, there was archery, there was, you know, people who used swords, people who used spears and staffs and different types of weapons for battle. That was their version of what we would now use an automatic weapon or something like that. So Arjuna was basically, I mean, if you wanted to equate it, it's something that we all know, which is he would be like a Navy SEAL or a special operations military person that is uniquely trained for combat and is not shying away from combat, like actually looking to go to combat. You see this with people, even in martial arts, like people who would see that and go, I would never want to do that. Like, that is something that it doesn't interest me. But the person that is interested in it, that's how they see that as fun. And they're ready to go into that arena and get that feeling. So people have that towards war and combat. And Arjuna is one of these people. And he even says, Arjuna is speaking right now. He says, I behold those who are about to give battle, having come together here, wishing to do service in warfare for the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra, who is basically the Duryodhana is his son, and that means like dirty fighter. And he's like the bad guy, you could say. He's the Darth Vader-ish type character, but he's also Arjuna's cousin. So there's an interesting dichotomy here of like, there's family, you know. So then Arjuna starts to look out, because him and Krishna are on a chariot and they're looking out. I always give the example, it's kind of like Braveheart, if you know that movie, where the way they would fight is, my sideline's up here, your sideline's up over there, and you're on a big field, and you're gonna, you're gonna get after it with these people, and not a very efficient, smart way to fight, but that's the way it was done. So Arjuna and Krishna ride out in the chariot, just like in Braveheart, where they ride out, you know, right before it's gonna start, just to be sure, hey, where are we gonna do this, you know, and. So Arjuna and Krishna ride out, they look out. And so this is 1.26. Arjuna saw standing there fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, and friends. 1.27 says, Arjuna saw fathers-in-law, companions in these two armies, and contemplated all his kinsmen arrayed. 1.28, he sees it and he says, filled with infinite pity, despondent, he said this, having seen my own people, Krishna, desiring to fight approaching. And then 1.29, this is the thing that really speaks to me. He says, my limbs sink down, my mouth dries up, my body trembles, and my hair stands on end. So this is Arjuna speaking. And he's saying his limbs, basically his limbs are heavy. His mouth dries up, you know, the saliva just goes away. My body trembles and my hair stands on end. And 1.30. The Gandiva bow falls from my hands. My skin burns. I'm unable to remain as I am, and my mind seems to ramble. I perceive inauspicious omens, O Krishna, and I foresee misfortune in destroying my own people in battle. I do not desire victory, Krishna, nor kinsmanship, nor pleasures. What is kinsmanship to us, Krishna? What are enjoyments, even life? So, we're going to back up and unpack it a little bit. So, I was reading an interesting book recently, and it's called The Fortunate Son, and it's by Lewis Puller Jr. Lewis Puller Sr. is the most decorated Marine ever. His name is Chesty Puller. And his son then, so Chesty Puller was in like something like in four wars, I think. He commanded Marine battalions. And then Lewis Puller was in Vietnam. And Lewis Puller talks about his experience in Vietnam and when he was leaving, getting on the plane to go to Vietnam. And he said, my psyche unraveling. My father's tears had unnerved me. A chill went up my spine and fear entered my mind. My body shook and I could not control the way my body was unable to catch its own breath. So, I mean, this is not unique to Arjuna, especially with war, but it doesn't even have to be war. Because if you just go to WebMD, and I'm looking at it right now, and you just look up the signs and symptoms for anxiety, it's panic, fear, uneasiness, not able to stay calm, sweaty limbs, numbness, tingling, uncontrolled shaking, heart palpitations, dry mouth, dizziness, tense muscles, and nausea. So Arjuna is basically reading off the signs and symptoms on WebMD for anxiety. Now, you can take this extreme example of war, but then not only war, you kind of up the ante. You take somebody who's down with war, who's okay with war, who actually finds some enjoyment in combat. That's Arjuna. And then you have him look and you see his loved ones, who he's have to fight for political reasons. I mean, there's a whole story behind that. Why is he seeing out on the battlefield? He's seeing his cousins. He's seeing his grandfather, who he loves so much, his martial arts teacher. He's seeing these people. And he's shooken. And he never thought that he would shake at war. So, now it doesn't have to be that extreme, because you could take anything in your life that gives you pause. It might not be war, right? It might be, for my mom, it's like, my mom, she can't drive if it's snowing or raining. So anything in that arena, I mean, you might as well put her on the battlefield. You know, it's like for what's going on in her body. For others, it might be speaking in public. Other people, it might be, something is something that one person finds incredibly simple, another person finds incredibly difficult. Going to the mall, walking through the mall, somebody has this disorder where they get into the mall and they panic. So what the Bhagavad Gita is, essentially, is a book on how to deal with these emotions that are coming up for Arjuna. Because then Krishna teaches him how to deal with these feelings that he's having, how to resolve them in himself. Which is everyone's battle eventually. We all have these feelings. They all come up. It's just a matter of time before we have the human experience of fear, anxiety. And how it manifests for each of us is different. But the idea with the Bhagavad Gita is that now there are some tools so we can deal with this. And this is what yoga is. Yoga has very little to do with the asana. In the West, we focus on that. We think that's where it's at. But in reality, my teacher Raghunath says this great thing. He says that asana is a condiment. And the more I thought about that, I thought, yeah, it's true. Like, ketchup is, if you eat french fries, ketchup is amazing. Like, ketchup is perfect. People like ketchup on their eggs, hash browns. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, ketchup is a delight. It's an accent to a food. But it's not the food. Nobody would ever think yeah, I want to sit down. I'm really hungry. Let me just sit down and eat some ketchup. And that's asana. Now, I think asana gets a lot of us into yoga. And that's our gateway drug, is that we make that connection very quickly to the asana. And the next podcast that I'm going to do is on the history of yoga, which I find incredibly interesting. Once you delve into the deeper philosophical side of yoga, maybe even spiritual side of yoga, you realize how rich it is. And that the asana, while amazing for your body, and while I practice some asana every day, I realize that it pales in comparison to the philosophical and spiritual benefits of yoga. And just from this shloka in 1.29, very clearly telling us, like, this is everyone's experience at one point or another in their life. Now, when he talks about the Gandiva bow falls from my hand, the first time I read that, I was like, oh, all right, he dropped his bow. Big deal. There's two things going on. One, if you spend time around any military person, they will tell you that your connection to your weapon is extremely important, and you don't drop it. It's a big thing if in training you drop your weapon. So in this way, one, he's dropping his weapon. It's a clear sign something's wrong. Now, Arjuna isn't just like your average soldier. He is the SEAL Team 6, which is like the elite SEAL teams. He's like Achilles, you know, you name it. That's Arjuna, right? He is the, you know, the George St. Pierre of the... George St. Pierre is a very famous MMA fighter who is very well-rounded and very formidable. So he is that to this time period of warfare. So for him to drop his bow is a big deal. On top of that, this is just not your average bow. This is a bow that was given to him by Agni. Agni is the god of fire. And Agni got this bow from Brahma. Brahma is the creator of our material universe, according to the yogis. So this is a celestial bow. It's not just not your average bow that you get at Dick's Sporting Goods. You know, it's a special bow that has an unlimited amount of arrows in its quiver. So it's inexhaustible. So pretty special bow. But he drops it, falls to the floor. And then he says, my skin burns, and I'm unable to remain as I am, and my mind seems to ramble. This is just like Lewis Puller saying that his father's tears had unnerved him, and his psyche was unraveling. It's amazing, right? So Krishna then says, hey, I don't desire victory, nor kinship, nor pleasure. Like, he basically says, hey, I want out. I should just kind of go up to the forest, and I should kind of be a renunciate, and kind of, I'd rather do that than kill my own people. Very clearly stating that. It seems like the yogic way, right? It seems like the good argument. But Krishna says something different, which is he tells him to stay and fight, which seems counterintuitive. And we'll go into it more. I just want to kind of lay the groundwork of what the Bhagavad Gita is and how it starts off. Like, in the first chapter, you have somebody breaking down emotionally. because they're in a almost unsolvable problem of being in war, being a warrior, but also then seeing your family and your loved ones on the other side, and you balk, you freeze in a place you never thought you would freeze, which is on a battlefield, because that's his job. He's done it before. He knows how to fight. He knows how to do this. He's ready. There was a really horrible thing that happened to Arjuna's wife, that it was despicable that Duryodhan did to her. So he then wanted revenge for this, as did Arjuna's entire family. So there was reasons to be on that field. But of course he didn't anticipate seeing his grandfather and his teachers and his cousins and people who he loved. And then Arjuna gives him tools, like literal tools. It's like somebody gives you a hammer when you need a hammer, or a drill when you need a drill, or they give you the right size wrench. So Arjuna, for the entire Bhagavad Gita, gives him different tools to deal with this very situation. The main tool that he gives, that he always comes back to, is bhakti. Bhakti is devotional service. And we'll get more into that. So until next time.